I'll be back pulling strings to get guys elected mayor and governor before you ever get a 10-buck raise. Yeah. How many of those guys in office owe everything to me? I made them. Yeah, I made them just like a tailor makes a suit of clothes. I take a nobody, see? Teach him what to say. Get his name in the papers. Now, pay for his campaign expenses. Dish out a lot of groceries and coal. Get my boys to bring the voters out. And then count the votes over and over again till they added up right and he was elected.
Incompetence in office, the bane of our existence.
To think that in the last election I voted for that unmitigated scoundrel.
Not only that, darling, you voted for him twice.
Well, I cast my first vote so early it slipped my mind.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. Democracy simply doesn't work.
Welcome back to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It's my pleasure to have Pete Quinones back on the show. Of course, Pete is the host of the eponymous Peter Quinones show, right? very clever. So how you doing, Pete?
I'm doing great, man. It's hooray democracy.
Yes, it's been a week since Election Day. Actually, that doesn't matter because I think Election Day started like in July or something because they have like early voting. So it's election season, which just extends out as far as possible, as far as necessary, so the Democrats can steal it, I guess. Yeah, with mail-in voting. What we have now is it looks like the GOP will take the House. I think they're one vote shy of a majority last time I checked. So they're letting them take that. A very slim margin. The Democrats have secured the Senate, possibly extending their lead by one vote after if they pull off the victory in Georgia. There's a runoff between Herschel Walker and Raphael Warnock in Georgia, I think, in December. So as it stands now, it's 50-49. Of course, if it's 50-50, the tie will be broken by our stately vice president, Kamala Harris, or eloquent stately president, vice president. So either way, they can control the Senate, but it looks like Republicans can control the House, where Kevin McCarthy will hold the pass against big government socialism and authoritarianism. I guess there's a battle there. Who's going to control the, become speaker there. Now, with the election, we've had, a lot of evidence or accusations of funny business in Arizona. I think in Maricopa, as much as 20% of the machines stopped working. Maricopa, again, is a Republican stronghold. You can't win the state without Maricopa County, from what I understand. And they were told about the machine stopped working and to throw in a paper ballot, which no one knows if it were counted or not. Nevertheless, the results, I think the media has called it for the monochromatic Katie Hobbs. She's the current Secretary of State. So she presided over the chaos, which she benefited from. Over Kerry Lake, the sort of the telegenic Trumpist insurgent candidate, who was as leading as much as 10 points in the polls. So anomaly there. In Nevada, you had votes materialized, handed the that Senate seat to Democrat Catherine Cortez Masto. Of course, we have Pennsylvania, where I guess assuming there isn't fraud there, whatever, I think they have mail-in balloting there too. They decided to elect a cognitively impaired stroke victim that was a Fetterman to the Senate. So here we are. It's either way, it's an indictment of democracy. President Biden has instructed us to just be patient and wait for the votes to come in. You know, they have to fortify the election in the words of Molly Ball. That's Time Magazine, article she wrote last year about how they'd gotten together to fortify the election. So here we are. My feeling, without getting into the details, you had 75% of the American people saying they were dissatisfied with how things were going, yet no incumbent Democratic governor or senator was tossed out. And we've had another election season where you have lax voting regulations and chaos benefiting the Democrats. So again, another election, more funny business. It's sort of this nonsense has become normalized all coming out of COVID, where this type of voting method has become accepted, mail-in voting perhaps, because it's just an invitation for ballot harvesting, and evidently that's what they've been able to pull off in some of these states. So I've rambled on enough. What's your take on the election?
Well, obviously, I believe that there's some shenanigans going on in Arizona and Nevada. In the state that I'm in, we had the counting done that night, and Florida, which is 5 times bigger than Arizona and probably 7 or 8 times bigger than Nevada, they were able to do it all in one night. It's just to believe that. Well, I mean, all right, well, let's play devil's advocate here. The Republicans are terrible. I mean, they're just awful. I mean, most Republicans couldn't run on inflation because all the incumbents voted for the bills that caused the inflation. They couldn't run on anti-COVID because most of them didn't speak out against the COVID mandates and the lockdowns and everything else, the vaccines, everything else. So playing devil's advocate, sure, of course you're, if you can't run on, harping on the biggest issues in the last couple of years, I mean, what are you running on? Now, the populists, the Trumpers running, like J.D. Vance, I think J.D. Vance winning in Ohio is a definite sign that, as someone who lived in Ohio for 6 months last year, it's a definite sign that Ohio is sick of business as usual. I mean, they have one of the worst governors, one of the worst Republican governors on the planet. DeWine is just an old school swamp thing from DC from the early 2000s. I think them picking J.D. Vance is definitely Ohioans saying that they want change. They just didn't have a good. They didn't have a good choice for governor. The one guy who was running against DeWine in the primary was just too much of a farm. I don't know. He just came off kind of odd. And so when I look at this, I just think it's sure their shenanigans are happening in a couple places, but for the most part, I just see this as a lot of people looking at the Republicans and thinking, why should I vote for you? I think people stayed home. I think people just went in and just, they were like, who can I vote for? I think more and more you're starting to see a lot of people realizing that voting is not going to get us out of this. And I think that's a good thing. The more people who realize that, the better. And I think that the ones who say they will do anything to get us out of it, they have to be stopped. And I think that's why you saw what you did in Arizona. They can't have somebody like Blake Masters anywhere near the Senate. He is just way too much of a wild card to them. He's somebody who, not only reads like esoteric libertarian stuff, he also, I've heard him on podcasts quoting Ted Kaczynski. They're not going to let him anywhere near the Senate. And Carrie Lake was just, she's too much of a firebrand, too much of somebody who can really upset the apple cart. And I think what we saw in the 2020 election, how Arizona was one of those places, Maricopa County was one of those places that was stolen. And it seems like the Democrat machine, the progressive machine, definitely has Arizona and Nevada locked down as far as fortifying elections go. Now, I don't know that there was anybody running on the Republican ticket out of Nevada who was going to be, you know, a Blake Masters or a Kerry Lake, but still, you know, if you can lock it down and fortify it, they're going to do it. At this point, the Republicans are just going to have to figure out how to do that, lock it down and fortify it, like DeSantis has figured out how to do in Florida.
Yeah, I heard some stupid lady on CNN accusing DeSantis of rigging the game or gaming the system by clamping down on voter fraud, voter ID. Okay. It's an interesting take. He's arrested people for committing electoral fraud, you know, so that sort of thing. No states where they kind of tighten things up a bit. You did have a red wave. And it's like I said, there's two ways you can cope with this. It's like you can say, well, the Republicans can't win a national election. It was the wave was reduced to a ripple because of demographics. The country's changed a lot. And there's some truth to that, of course. That is an electoral strategy by the Democrats, openly admitted, you know, turning the country blue by making it brown. And then there's those who say, well, it's all voter fraud. So, what's, you know, so you can't cope with that. Well, it's both at the same time. So it's kind of a pincer attack against Heritage America. But looking at how voter, yeah, J.D. Vance in Ohio, I kind of ran an implicitly pro-white campaign. He did talk about things like, you know, Oxycontin and the opioid crisis and deindustrialization. So sort of a Trumpist appeal. He was actually endorsed by Donald Trump, and he won handily, I think, by 10 points or something, 55-45 or something close to that.
Mm-hmm.
If you look how it was broken down, 70% of the voters in the 2022 midterms are white, ethnic white, probably a little higher because no longer wants to be white anymore. So people don't identify as white. Almost 60%, 58% of that 73% voted for the Republicans. 52% of married women voted for the GOP. From an electoral standpoint, you'd think the Republican Party would become more of an explicitly pro-white, that isn't say anti-brown, anti-black party. It's just recognizing the interest that they're of America's ethnic whites and the majority of the country, and those interests should be represented in government and in politics. You had Steve Miller running ads in Georgia, which were calling out anti-white racism, which I think says something, because that's seeping into the mainstream, as you'd expect. White identity would be forged because of all the nonsense the past few years, particularly the Black Lives Matter stuff, and just the hysteria and insanity that in many ways both parties kind of accepted. It was actively promoted by the Democratic Party, and it's accepted by the Republican Party in terms of electoral fraud. A lot of people were protesting in 2020. I don't hear anyone protesting now, despite evidence of a similar game being played. But nevertheless, as I made the point in 2020, when Trump was claiming there was fraud, if the Republican establishment wants the Republicans to win, they had the institutional power to guarantee that, because in all the states where there was evidence and accusations of fraud, problems with mail-in voting, illegal voting. Mail-in voting was determined to be illegal because the laws were changed unconstitutionally, supposedly for COVID, but still nevertheless, you know, so if the ballots are cast illegally, if the procedure for voting is illegal, how can those ballots be valid? Nevertheless, the courts decided not to consider that because whatever reasons. But nevertheless, Republicans still had the institutional authority institutional power to check that, because all the state legislatures, Michigan, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Arizona, were Republican controlled. And the Constitution grants those state legislatures plenary authority to choose the manner in which electors are chosen. And in fact, some of that was talked about, but then all of a sudden they were accused of considering reversing the election, which no one ever does, I guess, even though we have Democrats doing that, suggesting people do that in 2016 with electors, unfaithful electors, electors to defect and vote for Hillary Clinton as opposed to Trump in the Electoral College. And what everyone did forget is January 6th was supposed to be a day when the validity of the election is actually debated in the Congress. You know, when it's certified and voted on, Congress has to vote to certify, they accept the elections. There was supposed to be a debate, and all of a sudden Nancy Pelosi got her riot, which then they was transmogrified into an insurrection. And then you had all the January 6th committee hearings and all the media gaslighting everybody, saying that only crazy people believe in electoral fraud, even though in 2000, 2004, 2016, Democrats, I don't think the Democrats have accepted a Republican president as being legitimately elected since 1988. Mm-hmm. You know, but again, this is the insanity. But now we forget that they were supposed to debate that, and there was talk of them being rejected. And by the way, technically speaking, all that's constitutional, because you don't have a certification process. You don't vote on it unless there's an option not to certify, because why have the process? But that riot, you know, the problems that were stirred up overshadowed that. They decided not to challenge it, not to consider all the problems that people pointed out in 2020. So that's where we are. So now it's become sort of normalized. And now you're an election denier, the same way you're a climate denier, a Holocaust denier. That word, it's a childless accusation. What does it mean if you simply question the integrity of an election, even though that's done all the time? But yeah, as far as the Republican Party, if there were to, this sort of a strategy of pandering to minorities and ignoring whites, if you look at the numbers, you think if they were to get like a supermajority of whites voting for them, like 70% or 75%, and they got 40% and 35-40% of Hispanics, and you know a larger percentage of the Asian vote, they would win electorally, you know.
Yeah, the it is interesting that J.D. Vance did run a specifically pro-white campaign without ever saying that. He just concentrated on the issues that most affected whites. In his victory speech, he actually mentioned the opioid crisis, which I think you and I both know looks like it was planned and targeted at white groups, white people. The term pillbillies was thrown around by the Sacklers, and we won't say where, you know, what lineage they come from. One thing that you did mention there was the unconstitutionality of mail-in voting and things like that. Well, one thing that the Molly Ball article actually showed was that they started that in 2019. They started pushing to change those laws before COVID even happened. You know, and a good conspiracy theorist like myself could wonder, you know, what this whole COVID thing was all about, and you know how that help to get us to where we were, and also the riots, the George Floyd riots and Summer of George. It definitely seems, you know, I podcast on the Molly Ball article as soon as it dropped, and I was like, it's insane that they published this. And it's really not. They're very brazen about the things that they do. They like to brag about it. They like to shove it in your face. And I think until the GOP, you know, grows some cojones and really just decides to clean up, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why they can't let Carrie Lake be governor, because they know that she will do everything she can to fix the voting problems in Arizona. And until the GOP decides that they're going to play the game the same way the left plays the game, and you know, I tend to believe that if the GOP took the gloves off, that they would be better at the game than the left is, because they're a lot smarter, they're a lot more dedicated, and they're a lot more ideological. And if people really started looking back at, like, you know, I'm going to mention this and it's going to be funny to some people, but the Constitution, and you look at, like, in the preamble where you talk about securing the blessings of liberty. I mean, that is bringing down the hammer upon people who would destroy, quote unquote, democracy, like the left does with their voting and their secure, you know, making sure that fortifying the voting. I think the right could definitely make it so that you wouldn't see this problem again. And, you know, I have to wonder whether DeSantis, in doing what he did in Florida and just redrawing of districts and everything that he was able to do, if you're not, this isn't going to last a generation or two as long as they want it. So I think that one thing that when it comes to the voting issue, when it comes to the issue of whether, you know, fortifying the vote is actually fraud, which I think we both believe it is, we need DeSantis's all over the place willing to do what he's done and willing to take the heat like he takes it. You know, I about a year ago, I was talking to a friend of mine and we were, you know, saying that we just hope DeSantis, we wish DeSantis would be more, would embrace his heritage a little more and be a little more like El Duce. And it definitely seems like he, he did it, man. He flipped Dade County. I mean, I lived in Florida for a number of years. I lived in Broward County for a number of years. I mean, a couple of decades. And I lived in Miami for some of that time. And there was no bluer county than Miami-Dade. And he flipped it. And it's just, and I don't think that he did it. It wasn't all because he was able to change laws, change this. I think it was because he showed Floridians that he cared about them in what he did, especially with COVID. And I think that he is the model going forward for Republican politicians. And I still consider him to be a moderate compared to what I would do if I was in his shoes.
Yeah, there's he acted like a governor, and he showed like a sovereign in many respects. Mm-hmm. And he was able to rein in Disney, which, you know, other governors haven't been willing to rein in corporations. That, you know, like, good example, Mike Pence in Indiana with Salesforce, when they made him, you know, repeal the Religious Freedom Restoration Act up there in regards to gay marriage and these things. They all backed down, and he stood up to the Disney Corporation. He also went after sort of the woke stuff too, especially with the you know, the anti-grooming laws there. Mm-hmm. Now, it's very modern because he basically, the law to enter says you can't start until they're in the fourth grade. So, you know, we've come a long way since Anita Bryant, you know, down there in
Florida.
Well,
that's, I've heard a lot of people, you know, say, criticize him, you know, because, oh, well, they can start grooming in the fourth grade. But it really is when you have a whole group of people arguing that we need to groom 8-year-olds and under.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know this for a fact. I do know some people who know DeSantis, but I don't know this for a fact. But I think he very well could have picked the cutoff at the third grade on purpose. Because if you take it up to the eighth grade, now you're talking about 12 and 13-year-olds. It's not as impactful when you have a bunch of people, a bunch of absolute lunatics who should be on boxcars screaming that they need to teach. They need to teach third graders, 8-year-olds and younger, about gay anal sex. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if that was, if that may have been on purpose to put them in that, to just keep that age range going. But, you know, still, no matter what, they lost their minds. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think it caused a lot of people, especially a lot of Floridians who weren't awake to exactly what was going on with this agenda, to go, to go, wait a minute, whoa, why do they want to teach 8-year olds and younger about gay anal sex? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you look at the numbers of how he was elected, and you know, I mean, he's not going to win. I lived in Broward County. He's not going to win Broward County. Broward County is predominantly Jews from the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. He's not going to win no matter what, but he just, the whole rest of the state, you know, for the most part, just was like, yep, we're with you 100%. Mm-hmm. I think he did. Not only is he a good politician, but I think his way of fighting against all of the woke stuff was a way to wake up his constituency, even people who may have been may have been lukewarm to him. You know, and been like, whoa, what is all this stuff that's happening? And it's amazing to watch. I'm telling you, if every Republican governor in this country just started acting like Ron DeSantis, there's no telling what the direction would be.
Well, that's the thing here, is a lot of people talking about Ron DeSantis being on running for president in 2024 because of his success in 2022. But there's a question, would someone like Ron DeSantis have a national appeal given the existence of the Democratic machinery now, with voter fraud, with normalized voter fraud, with mail-in balloting, extending voting, early voting and mail-in balloting, and even after balloting? So I think in Pennsylvania, did they get like mail-in votes where the date on the stamp was before the vote or something? It didn't make any sense. Yeah. Someone was just stacking votes and sending it in, and they were getting the date screwed up. But good example, contrast to like up in some people have said that what's happened is a lot of people have migrated to these states. So the states are now, you know, ruby red, and the blue states are deep blue, because there's been a qualitative change in the electorate. So those critical of Hochul in New York or Whitmer in Michigan migrated south. And so now the electorate is even more liberal or more blue. So, some of these misfits can get reelected. You know, good examples up in Michigan, where, and you posted that thing, the recording of Dana Nessel, the attorney general, calling for a drag queen for every school, right?
Yeah, Jewish lesbian.
Yeah, Jewish lesbian. And they elected a Jewish lesbian attorney general, and look what they have. You have a sexual revolutionary and a chaos agent, your chief law enforcement officer of the state. At the same time, they vote to enshrine abortion as a constitutional right?
Yeah.
Up there. And of course, overwhelmingly reelect Gretchen Whitmore. But there's a question of how valid are these votes now? You know, what's the voting procedure in these states? Michigan was one of these states that flipped overnight, you know, for Biden in 2020, miraculously. It's a question of whether or not, you know, when you're talking about the failure of the Republicans to get the message through, yeah, they didn't provide an alternative, and they couldn't go, you know, they couldn't really, although you can really, because the way the public thinks is whoever's in power gets punished. So you can vote for something and still criticize the president because he's in power in the party, because they're perceived as being a power. So they're going to be blamed for it. But the idea that, you know, they're not really providing an alternative, so why vote for him? I mean, I can see why people weren't riled up to go out and vote to make sure that Mitch McConnell was not this other corrupt octogenarian, becomes majority leader. What difference does it make? I mean, they're still going to be sending billions of dollars to the Ukraine. you know, poking the Russian bear and threatening nuclear war in the Ukraine. You know, were the Republicans going to stop that? Well, McCarthy said the funding may stop. He hinted that. Now, whether or not that would happen or not under Republican leadership in the House is another question. But yeah, what's the reason to vote for him? What is being suggested here is that as a system becomes more chaotic and less legitimate in the eyes of more and more people in the public, you're going to have a decentralization or a sort of a balkanization of the country and a sort of a return to the states. And we see that in a lot of things like abortion. Good example, the states, the Supreme Court simply returned the question to the states and some of the states have responded. And they're calling that anti-democratic. I was like, what? Now you get the vote on it. But some people say this is going to happen because as the country becomes more diverse per mass immigration, I think 5 million people have entered into the country illegally under Biden since January.
Could be more than that.
It could be more than that. And you have Mayorkas, who, again, another tribesman who's dedicated to keeping the borders fluid, wide open. You're going to get sort of this tribalization of politics. And we saw that in Los Angeles, which is California is a great example of what happens when you have diversity, you go out of control, becomes ungovernable. And that's perfect for the oligarchs because they can rob the country, rob the state blind and face no opposition. They can install governors like Gavin Newsom, who's not going to, represent the people. But in Los Angeles County, with that school board controversy, not school board, sorry, it was the city council. And they were all talking about they're all talking very ethnically. How, you know, the Armenian guy wants an Armenian district, and how it's called light supremacy, where these Latinos are calling out the blacks and the Jews. And they didn't know they were being recorded, so they were being honest. And the idea is that politics is very ethnic. And maybe that's a better way to approach politics, because it's more honest, because you can address people and you don't have to lie about things. And politics is a spoils game. And that's, at the very least, the more honest way to approach these things. Well, the country, as it becomes more diverse, it's going to become that way, particularly with the non-whites. It's very ethnic and tribal. And so there's sort of this appeal for these pocketbook issues like taxes or inflation or the price of gasoline, shortages. Yeah, in America of 1980, that would result in a landslide victory for the opposition party because things weren't going well. But in a country that's balkanized and racially divided and more racially conscious than ever, per the Democrats, per the liberal, per the left, because that's what it's identity politics. It's only white people who can't have that identity. But a country like that, it simply doesn't matter how corrupt and bad you are, how you misgovern your state or the city, the maladministration. Good example would be cities like Baltimore, Detroit, or Jackson, Mississippi. Regardless how bad the government is, the blacks are going to reelect the government. It's not going to make a difference. So this notion that you're running the country in the ground, there's going to be an electoral response to it. Well, that may not apply in a country that's becoming increasingly diverse. That's sort of the idea of creating a babble. That coupled with the fact that we really, on the margins, there's always electoral fraud. I think we're dealing with a situation where elections are becoming completely co-opted or corrupted, and that they simply can't assume that the results anyway reflect reality now with the voting methods we have.
Well, chaos grows government. And when we look around and we see like the balkanization and we see certain areas that are becoming unlivable, Baltimore hasn't been livable in a very long time. I mean, it's been really bad there. Parts of New Jersey, parts of Chicago, all these big cities, parts of New York still. Well, New York was getting too safe, so they had to make it dangerous again. It just helps to grow government. And it not only helps to grow government, it gives government an excuse to be heavy-handed, be more heavy-handed, be tyrannical. That's part of the reason for why Jan 6 is an insurrection. It has to be an insurrection because now it's an excuse for Joe Biden to give a speech in Philadelphia with stormtroopers behind him, and it's all in red. The one of the things you said there, talking about people leaving states and going to like Florida and making them bright red. Texas seems to be getting doing that as well. There's a lot of hope there, because if you can get a bunch of states to just be bright red, you know, I was telling you before we started recording that the state I live in, the Republicans won by more than double the votes of the next person. And that just, yeah, there was some shit lib on Twitter. I just pointed out to them that, you know, it's like, you know, good luck doing your voter fraud in Alabama. And the person was like, well, Alabama's lost. We're not even going to think about Alabama anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and it almost seems like that's the way it is in Florida now, too. And to a certain extent, Texas and Kentucky's always been that way. You know, Kentucky's always the first state that they call in a presidential election. They just say the Republicans won Kentucky, and you have these states. And I think that is better. It's better for the country because it goes quicker to more of a de facto secession, where you're just thinking this basically the state isn't even part of the union anymore. So, you know, let's not even pay attention to it. We'll focus all of our, you know, a state I used to live in, Georgia. I mean, Georgia's slowly turning blue. And one of the reasons it's slowly turning blue is because of voter fraud. I mean, what's funny is I was telling somebody that I lived one county over from Palm Beach when the 2000 election, when you had all the voter fraud, mm-hmm. when you had the whole thing in the 2000 election. And I lived one county over from Fulton County in 2020 when you had, it's like wherever I move, it seems like. So now I've moved someplace where, I mean, it's just the brightest red, one of the brightest red states that you'll ever encounter. And I think that's good. I think, you know, all the Republicans leaving New York for Florida, or Republicans leaving Illinois and California for Texas and Alabama and even Mississippi, I think these are good things. You know, another thing that you had mentioned was you talked about them wanting to run DeSantis for president in 2024. You know, there's a real big difference between somebody, a governor being Machiavellian, you know, in his state, and somebody deciding to go to Washington, D.C. and overturning the apple cart. And, you know, and you saw the kind of pushback that DeSantis got. I mean, he was just vilified over and over again for just months upon months upon months. Don't say gay, all that stuff. And Disney, the war with Disney was, people don't even realize just how intense that was, because Disney was the biggest lobby in Florida for the last 60 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he decided to go to war with them, and he won. He basically won every war that he decided that he started. He's not going to be able to do that on the national. The Red Caesar that, you know, some of us talk about sometimes and we dream about. I don't think that, to me, that's not DeSantis. First of all, that person is not going to be pro-Israel. Just strike that thought. And it's going to be somebody who's just willing to die. You know, I mean, who's like, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to go to war with these people and with these groups. I mean, you're basically going to war with a nation. You're going to war with a group that has had power, you know, for centuries, but definitely for over a century in this country, to the point where you know, in 1905, it's like, oh, we're going to sanction Russia because there was a pogrom in Odessa. So wait a minute, what? Why are we sanctioning Russia for something that happened in Odessa in 1905? That doesn't make any sense.
Where is Odessa?
Yeah. It's like what just happened? DeSantis becoming president is just not something that I'm not excited about. I just think that it would be another Trump. You know, they'll find some, you know, connect them to Russia in some way, and put, you know, he'll be a Putin stan or something like that. Or somebody else, they'll pick their villain of the week. And I would rather just see, as somebody who wants states to become governors, to become more powerful and wield more power in their states and crush their opposition, red states. I want to see, I've said this for 2 years now. I want to see DeSantis become king of Florida.
Yeah, and that's why, under the original plan, that's kind of how it was supposed to, the states weren't supposed to be the junior leagues, for the minor leagues for national politics. They were supposed to be competing, and that's why senators were appointed by state legislatures. Maybe at the federal level, if you could repeal like the 17th Amendment, do things like that, and actually bring some sanity back to the franchise, where you instead of expanding the franchise, you restrict it. Because you realize you don't want any reprobate or fool voting. It's a very, if democracy means anything, it's a very serious thing. You should take it seriously. And if you don't have enough gumption, get up and vote on election day and have an ID and present it, you shouldn't be voting. Sorry, if you don't have the energy or the wherewithal to do that, don't vote. Simple as that. You should have a stake in your society. You should, if you're a patriarch of a family that's providing, future citizens, your vote should matter more than some lazy, jerk who doesn't have it. So all those things, this idea of egalitarianism, this cult of egalitarianism, how we're all equal. No, we don't equally participate in the political community. And it's crazy to let, felons vote, or to let, the demented vote, these things, but now that's kind of been the game. Just a mad rush for ballot harvesting so you can just overwhelm the system. That's what they do, like in the black community, when they get out the vote drive, they register a bunch of people. Most of the people never show up to vote. People vote in their stead. No one just enforces it. That's the type of games that are played in those urban areas. That's why there's so much fraud in those sort of the machine politics and all that. But the idea of the states having, states are supposed to be a competing power center to the federal government. That was the original idea. As the federal government loses its legitimacy, its moral authority that's built up, and I think it has, but in the eyes of many, the states have to step up, and that's the job of a strongman governor, defend his state. And I think that what made DeSantis powerful was he had the apparatus of the state around him to protect him. And that's what you need. That's what citizens need, the states to interpose themselves between them and the federal government, which is all too involved in people's lives now. And again, the federal government, people realize the federal government, if you're anyway normal, hates you anyway. It's no longer, it doesn't represent you. There's no like government looking out for U.S. interests and foreign policy. It's a metropole for various transnational, corporate interests. And then as you can see, they're just robbing the place. We're in the looting phase. You saw this FTX scandal, that cyber.
Oh yeah, I'm getting ready to record an episode with a friend of mine who's really up on the international finance to talk about this. This goes so much. This has World Economic Forum,
And Ukraine.
Ukraine is obvious. That was one that was one of the first things that you could find, because they were funneling money. That is just, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely amazing.
So there's that. And so just again, people looking at this federal government, like, what is this monstrosity now? And we can't trust the elections. We have a bunch of octogenarians. We have like Fetterman in the Senate. I heard a meme. It was Biden for the 2024 presidential election. It's Biden Fetterman 2024. It's a no brainer.
That's pretty good.
But that's where we are. And as a Z-Man, I was arguing by Z-Man, it says now, I think it was last week, saying it used to be that people believed in the great man theory of history, that you needed, great people to be entrusted with power to come to power. The powers that be now just want a bunch of carny acts in power.
Yeah.
They don't want serious government,
Yeah. And if it was that way all around, it would be, I'd be okay with it. But, you have, as long as the social engineers are out there and they're working, we need some strong, strong leadership, especially at the state level. Mm-hmm. I don't even really know how much I care about national politics anymore. It really is just a sideshow, but I care about my state and my city, and I care about the states that surround our state. So,
there is talk about democracy, our democracy. Democracy was on the ballot. Well, no, it really wasn't. Democracy is the method by which you choose candidates. but nevertheless, we were told that unless you voted for Democrats, democracy was threatened, meaning that if you vote against them, it's not democracy, whatever that means.
Democracy is just basically the morality of the progressives in charge.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who's voting against the progressives in charge is immoral.
And like Jamie Raskin pointing out that Russia is anti-trans, anti-gay, so that's where we have to support the Ukrainians fighting the Russians.
Yeah, Jamie Raskin.
Yeah.
Oh, that's another tribe member, huh? It just doesn't end. I mean, this is also the guy who, is probably the most bombastic about January 6th.
Yes. And after he excused the LA riots when he was a law professor at American University.
Well, I mean, the LA riots were about justice. They were about democracy. January 6th was not about democracy. January 6th was about a bunch of bad people who don't, who think that trans people shouldn't have special rights.
Mm-hmm. And we were an inch away from the QAnon shaman taking power, because he was going to steal Nancy Pelosi's gavel. And once you get that gavel, you have all the power.
I mean, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't take Jake as president now over what, as emperor now over what?
It'd make more sense.
Yeah.
I mean, you could string two sentences together, but they talk about democracy, but then as we kind of alluded to the Molly Ball piece in 2021 in February, when they admitted there was a cabal, a conspiracy, if you will, to fortify, secure the election by, big tech, organized labor, big business, and all that, the Chamber of Commerce, to manipulate the election. And Chris, what's come out with the Intercept piece regarding the Department of Homeland Security, Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Biden administration coordinating with big tech to suppress the dissemination of information, coordinate how the press handles it, suppress stories, social media, cancel people, get their accounts turned off, whatever, with Facebook, to control the flow of information regarding things like, Hunter Biden laptop, the election fraud 2020, the Ukraine, even the COVID stuff. So all these big issues that we're supposed to be considering, the public should be informed on to make their decisions when they vote, they're working to suppress information, to curate it, if you will. So you can't have a free election, really. Even assuming, putting aside all the voting issues, the mechanics of the election, which are problematic, but you can't have a free election if the information the public is getting is being censored or manipulated by governmental institutions working with big tech, which is a complete violation of the First Amendment and illegal. But nevertheless, we hear about democracy, but there's no free speech, no freedom of the press, if it's being controlled by people like Alejandro Mayorkas or Merrick Garland, not to mention Merrick Garland's reign of terror, arresting pro-life protesters, Catholic pro-life protesters, and intimidating pro-life protesters and these things. And of course, then the whole that has quite a chilling effect on these things.
What's Merrick Garland's background? Never mind.
He's another Quaker. But anyway, but there we go. I mean, so yeah, the flow. This is kind of funny. This gets into the deeper issue about democracy in a free society: is who controls the flow of information, who controls the culture, the political culture. If those in control of information, entertainment, and these things are all on board about directing society in a particular direction. That's another thing that we're confronted with is whether it's entertainment or music who controls the news cycle, what's reported, what we're allowed to talk about, because the social media is now sort of the public sphere. It's where we discuss things. It's the forum, if you will. And they're suppressing it. And I think what happened was for centuries, they've been able to give lip service to free speech and free press because they controlled it. The gatekeepers were there. About 15 years ago, all the gatekeepers were there, but all the walls came down. And with the internet, there was free debate, open discussion about those things, and they lost control of the narrative. So about 6-7 years ago, they decided to clamp down on. That's what we're seeing now. They can't afford to indulge free speech anymore because they can't contend with competing arguments. And we see that now with the response of the ADL to Kanye West and Kyrie Irving, this basketball player, this over-the-top response, which actually has done the ADL great damage, I think, in the eyes of the public. Whether or not that means anything in the long term, that's another question. But nevertheless, they're out in the open, openly calling for censorship and on these things. And they can't contend with any of the arguments. So they just shut everything down. And then they prove exactly what Kanye West was talking about by canceling him. I think it was Reverend Farrakhan who said that he lost almost $2 billion in 2 days. $2 billion in 2 days. And you have to ask yourself, did he ever have that money?
Yeah.
If you can lose it so fast.
Well, so I'm really torn about some things because, I cover a lot of topics on my podcast that should be out of bounds. I mean, I was telling you about some of the things that I've talked about recently, and basically YouTube is threatening to take my channel because over two episodes where I questioned the outcome of the 2020 election. And the second one, I mentioned the 2020 election. I mentioned that some people, I basically did what CNN and MSNBC did. Some people think that the 2020 election was was fraudulent. And YouTube has basically said, you can't post for a couple weeks. And if you do this again, your channel will be taken down. Mm-hmm. And I've addressed the JQ. I've done World War II revisionist history podcast, 22 episodes of that with my friend Thomas 777. And E. Michael Jones talking about who was responsible for the Weimar Republic. And the E. Michael Jones one I did not put on YouTube because I knew better. But the other ones, I mean, clearly I did an episode on what books the Nazis, the National Socialists burned. Mm-hmm. And that was a very popular episode. They'd had no problem with that one. But they have a big problem with questioning election integrity. So that tells me one of two things. It tells me that either they take the elections and who is being elected very seriously, or they want you to believe that they take whoever whoever is getting elected very seriously. Now, I don't know if it's a bait and switch. I don't know if it's really very important to them, but they have their people at Google, their people at YouTube, CIA, basically the same thing. And they're cracking down on people who would even mention the 2020 election. So that tells me that it's either very important to them or they want you to think that it's very important to them. And so, that's where it makes you wonder if you should really be talking about anything else at this point, because that seems to be very, you know, that seems to be that's the third rail right now.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's only the 2020 election.
Yeah.
Because you can talk about the 2000 election, the 2004 election, the 2016 election, and electoral fraud.
Sure.
But you can't talk about the 2020 election and electoral fraud.
Everybody talks about, everybody forgets about the 2004 in Ohio and the Diebold.
Yeah. I talked about that. I had questions. I have questions about that. The strange death of Mike McConnell, his airplane. And you know, I'm not the one that I don't think that they, you know, the powers that be may use, you know, the Republicans for a time, then use the Democrats. Right now, the Democrats are the party of chaos. That seems to be the plan. That's where George Soros is throwing their money. You know, $128 million, I think, this election cycle. He's electing all these wacky Democratic, you know, DAs. And so that's where it is. Now, it isn't saying they may switch, you know, horses and use the other side for all, like Mike Pompeo or something. That's another problem, is we're dealing with kind of a unigovernment, meaning those in power have more in common with each other than their constituents, meaning that they go to Washington, D.C., they become part of the Georgetown set, the lifestyle. That's just a cultural element of it. I think there's other factors involved. I think the Epstein story, I think, gives us some peek into what's going on, how people are compromised, either bribed or blackmailed. That's why Benjamin Netanyahu gets 29 standing ovations by the Congress. I think it was AIPAC that bragged that 95% of the people they endorsed won re-election.
Of course. That's like, and I remember, did you see, there was a tweet that Massey did, Thomas Massey did last year, and it showed up again when AIPAC did that 95% tweet, where it showed that AIPAC had like bought all these ads against Thomas Massey, and Massey had retweeted that, and he said, how is this not a foreign power meddling in our elections? And yes. He got called, and what do you think they called him for that?
Must be anti-Semitic, right?
Oh yeah, he's anti-Arab. I'm sorry.
Meddling in our elections. That's another thing. There was the recent dust up with Kanye West, the ADL, and now the Jews are now upset. I think there was an article in Tablets calling for the end for closing down ADL. The Jews now saying it's harming Jews now, because it's exposing them, or it's revealing too much. You know, they work better from behind the scenes, you know. Dynamic silence has always been their strategy. Now they're out in the open, and there's a tweet by, oh, what's his name? Guy who runs the ADL.
Oh, I don't know.
Jeff Greenblatt.
Oh yeah,
Jeff Greenblatt. He was like from the Biden administration.
He's Irish.
He's
right?
Irish. Yeah, but he was like a fundraiser or an actress from the Biden administration. So he's Abe Foxman wasn't really particularly partisan. You know, he played the game a little better. But Jeff Greenblatt has made it sort of a overtly partisan. Most of the ADA now is being liberal. That used to not be the case. Same with this. They're kind of becoming the Southern Poverty Law Center. Because right now the ADL works for the FBI, sort of the Southern Poverty Law Center. I think to become an FBI agent, you have to go to the Holocaust Museum and pay $18 before you get your badge and go on a tour there. That's true. Now, how is that relevant being a federal... You know, being an agent of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, I don't know. But nevertheless, he tweeted something like saying, it's about time that Jews organize and use their financial influence. It's about time.
What are you talking about? you read that and you have to wonder, even normies who are like, you know, maybe he'll tell a Jew joke every once in a while, you know, cheap, you know, what's the difference between a Jew and a canoe, stuff like that.
Yeah.
They have to look at that and be like, wait a minute. This doesn't make sense. Why? They're really pushing. And you really have to wonder, is this going to backfire on them? Because
why'd they even bother mentioning Kyrie Irving?
Right.
Just ignore it.
And then you look at like Dave Chappelle's opening monologue on SNL. And he was very clever. I mean, obviously he had that section in there that was extremely pro NATO, which just made me want to throw up, but he was very clever about some of the ways he was introducing the little JQ stuff here and there. And yeah, it was funny because I always, whenever I watch those monologues, I look at like the band behind them to see if they're laughing. And you know, you could see that they were not going to laugh at some jokes and they were going to laugh at other jokes. And is it being mainstream? That's the,
well, the audience was laughing. The audience was laughing at the jokes.
Yeah.
And when you're laughing at the jokes, you're admitting that the joke is revealing some truth, because it wouldn't be funny. I mean, you don't make it the joke for the joke, that type of humor to be funny, it has to reflect some truth. Just like any, for any stereotype, it has to reflect some truth, that otherwise people are like, what? You know, won't even be offensive, because it has to reflect some truth. That's why it's offensive, because it's some truth to it. But he's telling, he says that comes out and he goes, I reject all anti-Semitism, and I'm a good friend of all my Jewish friends. And that, Kanye, is how you buy time. And it happens, laughs. You know, then he, you know, he says, hope they don't take it all away from me, no matter who they are. It's not crazy. I can understand if you're in Hollywood and you're seeing all the Jews, you start to connect some dots and you start to think that they're working together. It's not crazy to think that. It's crazy to say it. Yeah. And everyone laughs. Why are they laughing? Just like Norm Macdonald's joke about Marlon Brando so many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that says, you know, Marlon Brando got in trouble for his remarks on Larry King when he said the Jews were in Hollywood. He has now apologized, met with Jewish leaders. The Jewish leaders announced he's allowed to work again. So, you know, and it gets a laugh. Of course, that was, you know, almost 30 years ago. But it was interesting, yeah, regarding Jeff Greenblatt, he also sends a tweet out that he wished to fight anti-Semitism and those who criticize the state of Israel. Well, wait a second. The ADL is in the business of protecting the interests of the state of Israel. They, like AIPAC, are a foreign lobbyist, and they should register under the Foreign, Agent Registration Act. Because now criticizing a foreign government is anti-Semitism, and your job is protecting the image or the interest of that foreign government. So if this an ADL, which is a Jewish organization, so if that is the case, then why should we trust anyone who has any affiliation or gets support from the ADL in any position of government, national security, because now this is a lobbying group for a foreign government. It's becoming obvious, you know, same with AIPAC. It's the American Israeli, you know, political action committee. It used to be, the American Zionist Party or committee or something, that President Kennedy and his brother Robert tried to get registered under FARA, which I think dates back to the late 40s.
What happened to them?
Yeah. So, and this is another thing, is when you're talking about our democracy, this is a question that has to be addressed, is the influence, the reach of Jewish power and Zionists in our government. It's something that no one wants to talk about. Certainly DeSantis is going to talk about it. And this is one of those things where, you know, until you talk about it, and it, again, why does it take a so-called musician rapper? You need a pop icon and a comedian to bring this up. When eloquent, informed on the matter? No, but yet nevertheless, that's what it takes. Because no serious political commentator, or philosopher or politician will take it up. Even though evidently, to the crowd laughing in the audience live and everyone laughing at home watching it, Chappelle was raising some big issues there about the direction of our country and who really governs, who really controls things controls our government.
When you look at the history of the court jester, it's not it might not be shocking that it's the comedians that could shed light on this. And Kanye is pretty funny when he wants to be.
But we're a liberal democracy. We're free, right?
What does that even mean? I don't, you know, liberalism is, it's so funny when, you know, I've been writing recently about, you know, conservatism and what do conservatives conserve, and they basically only conserve liberalism, liberalism and progressivism. And is liberalism great? You know, even, you know, people say, well, I'm not a liberal, I'm a classical liberal. I'm like, well, classical liberal is basically what this country was founded upon, and look where we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're not going to secure the blessings of liberty, as I said earlier, which to me means, well, we founded this thing upon some principles, and we're going to make sure that those principles get carried out. And anyone who speaks out against those principles or tries to teach something, teach an ideology that is that contradicts those principles, well, you know, maybe they get kicked out of the country.
Or, well, you know, have the cultural Marxists and the wackos have taken over colleges and infested the corporations, human resources department. Are they liberal? Are they tolerant? No. I saw there was a disturbing statistic I saw, and this also speaks to how young people are voting. Who's in control of shaping young people's minds, whether it's culture, entertainment, social media, Hollywood, and these things? Why should they have free reign to do that? 93% of the student body at the University of Michigan voted to reelect Governor Whitmore. 93%. That's not because she's so popular with the young people. If that's true, that there's what's going on those campuses is brainwashing. So why do people support those universities, continue to support it with taxpayer support, send their kids to these institutions? Either you get rid of the institutions or you route these people out of those institutions. They've slowly, over the course of 60 years, taken them over. Many people have written books about it. We laughed about it for 30 years as they took over the country. You know, political correctness and these weirdos that now control human resource departments and, you know, hiring, and are now, you know, telling us we have to worship transgendered people. We can't criticize them or make jokes about this stuff. But 93%, so something's happened culturally. This is where, regardless, you know, if you have elections, even control, tighten up the mechanics of the elections, if those in control of culture are given free rein to infect the minds of young people the way they evidently have, what are you gonna, you're going to lose the game, because that gives their minds are being warped in their youth, and they're becoming, you know, dysfunctional adults, as we see all around us today. It seems to me, if you're going to win this battle, you're going to have to create a sort of a youth culture, which is right wing, so yeah. Not libertarian, yeah. Right wing, meaning, right-wing. You know, Franco loving.
Yeah. Franco shirts, not not Che shirts.
Yeah. You know, that's not the, so I guess it's not, a guarantee of things, because look what's happened to Spain. But that's because Spain became liberal again, and look what's happened to it. But you need people who are just right wing, kids that think they're, instead of being left wing and wacky. And you got to route out these institutions, because these institutions they're not going to walk away, and you're not going to win an argument with them. You can't win an election with them because they steal, because they cheat, and they'll justify it. It's almost like in the Russian Revolution. You know, Lenin said, I'm not a terrorist. I don't believe in those tactics. But the moment he got in the power, he resorted to terrorism. Shoot them, shoot everybody. So that was, it was obviously they governed differently than how they campaigned, in a way. But, you know, here's the Bolsheviks, they have the October Revolution, and they have all these different parties, and they have the Constituent Assembly. And they're all voting. They're arguing with the Bolsheviks. And Lenin surrounds the Constituent Assembly with soldiers, and dissolves it. And that's the end of it. And that's almost like I almost feel like that's what the Republicans are. They're looking at the system as if it works legitimate. They're playing. The other side is playing by the rules, but they're not playing by the rules anymore. So when you get to that point, what do you do? You need a Franco.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that, you know, right wingers, or I mean, I don't even know if how many Republicans, people who call themselves Republican or conservative, or even right wing anymore. The I was going to mention, you were talking about like HR departments and stuff like that. I have a buddy who's doing research on like CEOs and like major CEOs, and he's been finding that a lot of the CEOs of major companies right now have humanities degrees.
Interesting.
They don't even have business degrees. You know, so, you know, why are they there? And, you know, then you start looking into stuff like ESG, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, well, maybe that's why we have a CEO with a gender studies degree. But the, you know, coming back to, you know, what needs to be done and what must be done. But I think really, if you're going to have that kind of right wing attitude, you're going to raise up right wing children. The concentration politically has to be local first. And I think that's the way you do it, because it's much easier. I got a Substack coming out tomorrow where I'm going to tell people, you know, one of the points of the article is something that I've been saying for, you know, 2 years, ever since COVID started, is get out of cities. Get as far away from cities as possible. Go to the smallest town that you can, you know, that you can actually deal with. But one thing that I've been saying is if you go to a small town and that sheriff, and hopefully the sheriff is an elected official, if that sheriff is not willing to stand up to the feds, if the feds show up and they want to operate in any way, shape, or form, and then you run for sheriff. You know, in most jurisdictions in the United States, you do not have to be a law enforcement officer to be elected sheriff. Mm-hmm. And you take it upon yourself to, you know, raise up a militia and, you know, say the feds are not going to come in here. They're not going to have any say. We are going to govern ourselves. And while you're doing that, you also look at what the schools are teaching. And, you know, you start at home. And I think that is the way, it's the way forward. In the meantime, you know, in the short term, I get accused of being black-pilled all the time. And I tell people, yeah, I'm black-pilled for the short term, but not for the long term. I think we're going to win. It's inevitable that, you know, what we saw earlier in the 20th century rise up in response to what's growing and what we have now is going to happen again. But in the short term, you know, things are going to be bad. So the best way that you can do it, the best way you can mitigate any kind of damage is to get into the smallest area possible and basically have somebody who runs it with an iron fist. Mm-hmm. And it's really the, you know, and I know a lot of people don't, and a lot of right wingers don't want to hear that. You know, people who call themselves right wingers, conservatives definitely don't want to hear that.
Well, these are nationalists. They think, you know,
yeah,
freedom of speech, you know, these things. Well, they don't believe in it. They don't believe in the liberal order that they make you live by. They don't believe in themselves, mm-hmm. obviously, because mm-hmm. in that case, you wouldn't have hundreds of political prisoners from January 6th, you know, languishing in prison still without trial. And you wouldn't have the Merrick Garland's Cheka FBI sending in 20 goons to arrest a pro-life protester who all tend to be Christian, Catholic, with, you know, 9 or 10 kids. Why does Merrick Garland hate those people so much? It's the same reason why you read accounts of the Bolshevik Revolution and the torture that certain ethnic groups did on Christians in Russia. And they went after the priests, or the, in the mm-hmm. the Spanish Civil War. They burned the churches, raped the nuns, and slaughtered the priests. Why were they mm-hmm. doing that? And I guess the left would call the Spanish Civil War, well, it was a mostly peaceful protest. The mm-hmm. Republicans were mostly peaceful, you know. You know, so it's again recognizing what the enemy is and making that friend enemy distinction that Carl Schmitt wrote about. But then again, you know, he's known as a Nazi, Why is that? Well, no, he's making some rather lucid, I think, fair criticisms of liberalism, the deceit of liberalism, the conceit of liberalism. They don't even play by their own rules. So at the very least, you have to circle back and go, okay, now how are we going to fight this? Doesn't mean you have to give up your values or descend into barbarism. It just means that you have to acknowledge what the enemy is. And good simple thing like protecting your children from them. It's interesting if you look at some of the results of the 2020 election with abortion, the abortion politics. Now, I knew when it was reversed that it wasn't going to we still have 50, 60 years of the sexual revolution, the culture war doing its damage. And some of that damage is simply irreparable outside a miracle or people seeking absolution. But people don't seek absolution because they're alienated from their church. But so much of something like abortion politics is a reflection of the sexual revolution and the corruption of people's sexual morality and where their life went wrong. And now their lives are so chaotic, they can't think straight about these things anymore, or morally or ethically about these things. So then they're easy to be manipulated. So literally the right to kill your unborn child theoretically is more important than you being able to afford a loaf of bread or being able to walk outside while getting raped or mugged. And evidently that's what matters to people in Manhattan or people in Michigan, you know.
I really think it's important for people to sit down and write down exactly what the enemy is. If this is one of, you know that I came out of libertarianism, and it's one of the libertarians do not want to fight the culture war. They don't even want to acknowledge that a culture war exists, because as soon as you acknowledge a culture war exists, you have to name the enemy. You have to call out the enemy for what it is. And as soon as you call out exactly what they are, you have to start devising a plan to defeat them. And that plan obviously is not going to be classical liberalism. It's not going to be Murray Rothbard. It's not going to be Adam Smith. It is going to be very heavy-handed.
It's going to be Franco and Carl Schmitt.
Yeah, they do not want to hear that. They do not want to hear people, you know, and I'm not even picking on libertarians. I'm talking about conservatives too. They do not want to hear that they are going to have to crush what exists right now. They're going to have to fight it, and not only fight it, they're going to have to defeat it. And defeating it means crushing it, making sure.
And it's not winning an argument, because what we saw with the election is, so, particularly with machine politics, if you have mechanics election manipulated or machine politics, where you can elect a horse or nominate a horse, and that horse will win election if that horse is the Democrat, because it's power politics. And that good example is Fetterman is effectively a horse in the Senate at this point. You know, but he's the 51st seat. He gets, you know, whatever, he gets the majority, and that's all that matters. And he'll just press the button, vote the way he's told to vote on certain matters. But it doesn't matter, because it's the machine politics that matters. So even from a direct political standpoint, you know, having debates, campaigns, making arguments isn't going to make a difference. And then coupled with the fact that you're dealing with an adversary which doesn't play by the rules, is ruthless. At that point, you got, okay, they don't play by the rules. What do? You can't be feckless. If you're feckless, you'll lose. And that's the problem. People don't want to make that leap. Like you said, don't want to crush them. Yeah. But in the meantime, they're molesting your children. I mean, if you send them to schools and these things, they're using the schools and the universities, not just universities, they're using the elementary schools, and, you know, the libraries. I mean, think about that for a second. When you have Dana Nessel, the chief law enforcement officer, and that, I have to imagine most people in Michigan are probably still sane. But when she gets up there and she says that we need, you know, drag queens are fun, drag queens are great, they're good for kids, we need drag queens in every school. I mean, so we have this groomer, this Jewish groomer up there. You know, wait a second, you know. I mean, why should this person be tolerated in power and trusted with any power at that point? And you think the Michigan legislature would convene a hearing and vote on her impeachment for making such a suggestion? But people, again, because she's in government, or it didn't, maybe social media is manipulated, doesn't get around. Maybe that's the DHS doing that, you know, whatever, you know, because the information isn't allowed to disseminate. But just, you know, that's what you're dealing with.
Or are people just not willing to accept what needs to be done to defeat people like this? I think that's what it comes down to. I mean, when you look at conservatives, you know, conservatives cry about everything on social media. They know, oh, it's, you know, it's drag queens and this and that, and they know all this stuff. But it's so much easier to, you know, cry about it on social media or post about it than to actually do something about it. You know, and also, there, you mentioned the term civic nationalism. There are still, people are so still caught up in the fact that, you know, if we could just vote the right people in there, kind of thing. Yeah, and at the most local level, sure, that can work. We saw it work on a state level. I mean, mm-hmm. DeSantis getting elected and the gay black crackhead not getting elected, which, you know, which basically 32,000 votes separated Florida becoming a third world state and becoming the thriving, you know, red, bright red, you know, place that so many people want to move to, wish they could move to, you know, that it is now. Mm-hmm. But I just think that people have become so, you know, the whole civic nationalism thing, I mean, it's really an opiate, where it's just like, well, somebody, I just pull a lever or check a box and somebody else does the job for me. The problem is they don't. And there's another problem is where are the people running for office who are actually going to do something about it? You know, it's like, I believe that a J.D. Vance is going to try to, you know, change things for his state. I believe that if Blake Masters would have been elected, I believe he would have tried to change, not only change things for his state, but, you know, I believe he's the kind of Machiavellian that, you know, would have tried to change things. But for the most part, they're just not. And I think that, you know, I know people, I had a friend who was a lobbyist. He started working on a Texas politician's campaign. Guy was running for Congress. Got elected to Congress, loved the work he did, dragged him to DC with him. And the guy in Texas, basically when he was running for Congress, he sounded like Ron Paul. And as soon as he got to DC, he became a swamp creature. And my buddy quit his job with him and, you know, went to work for a lobbyist. I'm glad he did, because it gave me a lot of information about insider lobbying, DC lobbying. But yeah, I mean, this is, you know, the whole we're going to vote the bums out, or we're going to get the right people in there who are going to be able to overturn the apple cart. It's just who, where, when, how long is it going to take? And everybody wants to talk about the march through the 100-year march through the institutions. How do you reverse that? And how long does it take? Mm-hmm. You know, without somebody going in there and going, well, you're going to try and kill me, but I'm here to destroy you people.
Yeah, there's a reverse Fabianism. Can you reverse engineer Fabianism and have it work for you? I don't know.
You'd have to. I mean, people would have to understand what it is in the first place, and they don't want to understand what it is. They're not interested. They're not going to read. You know, they're not going to go back and figure out, you know, why they picked the logo Wolf in Sheep's Clothing. Yeah, they're just, people just aren't interested. They're too busy doing whatever. You know, it's like when I became political, I would come home from work and I would read until 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and then wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go to work. But I'm not normal. I'm a moron. You know, it's like I just dive headfirst into everything I do. most people aren't like that. So,
well, I had someone say that, Matt, I don't have time between that and this. I don't have time to worry about these things. And I said, well, then why are you arguing with me?
Yeah.
I mean, so you don't know. What you're saying is you don't have the information. I'm saying, okay, I understand that. But then again, I do know you spend a lot of time on fantasy football in the NFL.
Yeah.
So people could do more. People need to be engaged. And they're not. They haven't paid attention. And, you know, what I mean by that is the thinking, but the part of the population that is potentially thinking that should be engaged, I'm talking about the middle class and these. Well, they've been sort of seduced with consumerism. And this is all part of that 20th century homogenization process, suburbia and these things. And, of course, their morals have been corrupted by Hollywood and Madison Avenue and the music scene. And so that's done a lot of damage. The point people can't think clearly about these things anymore. Abortion's a great example of that, where people's guilt is exploited on these matters. And the whole presumptions about, you know, about what their roles are, what freedom is, and, you know, what their responsibilities are all corrupted by it. You know, just the notion of sexual liberation is absurd. You're liberated from consequences? What are you talking about?
Sure.
Obviously, you're not.
Well, it's like everybody wants liberty, but people don't really understand what that means. First of all, I mean, is the idea, your idea of liberty, is it good? Is it good for you? Is it good for your family? Is it good for society? You know, what exactly is liberty?
Are you making the right choices? Are you doing what's good? Yeah.
Liberty, is it Patrick Deneen said, you know, when people talk about how, before the Enlightenment, you know, there was no freedom wasn't even considered. Freedom to people before the Enlightenment meant responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've lost, you know, with, I don't know if it was the Protestant revolt or it was the Enlightenment, probably a bunch, you know, a couple of the same things, but, you know,
people say the Protestant Reformation smashed the idea of the common good, particularly in England, where you had the sort of this Adam Smith, Manchester School justification for the exploitation of the peasants who had been forced off the commons. And then you had economics come and justify it all with Adam Smith and Sir Isaac Newton and these things. That's an interesting analysis. So we're dealing with a 500-year cycle that seems to be winding down, which I think may be why it's so hard to make sense of things, you know, from a human's lifespan, which is 75, 80 years. We're coming to the end of an epoch. I already said it, people talk about the apocalypse. Well, maybe it's occurred. We just don't realize it.
Well, you know, and
there for all to see now.
Even with Protestant revolt and the Enlightenment, we're still doing pretty good there for a while. And then,
well, there was Christian balance, and people would take all these things for granted. There was some semblance of moral there was enough residual Christian influence in the West that maintained the balance. That's been slowly eroded under the guise of liberty. So be careful, with that.
Well, we've also been, for over a little over 100 years now, been under the influence of a very decidedly anti-Christian ideology.
Yes.
Being pushed upon us. So, yeah.
That was freed up with the French Revolution. Yeah.
Yeah.
With emancipation. And so here we are. Well, I said I'd have you for an hour and a half, not more than that. So I know it's getting late, so I'm going to let you go. I mean, we're not going to solve the world's problems tonight anyway, are we? So we can kind of leave it open-ended.
I'll have you back on and we'll just continue the conversation.
There you go. just to pick it up. Where can people best follow your work?
The P. Quinones Show. I also want to shout out, because I'm missing a meeting tonight. A bunch of us content creators started something called the Old Glory Club. Mm-hmm. And if you go to YouTube and Substack and you search Old Glory Club, you'll see, it's basically a fraternity. Talk about a lot, discuss politics, but also discuss Americana. My first episode for the show was about American guns, the history of American weaponry. And we're looking to, talk more about America and what America once meant. And so Old Glory Club on YouTube, Old Glory Club Substack, but you can also find my Substack. It's petesubstack.com. And I appreciate you, Tim. Love your show.
Thanks for coming back on the show. I'll let you go and I'll be in touch.
Thank you.
Good night then. Bye-bye.
Let it begin.